This is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Yaqui on Culture and Race, Part 6. More on evolution and consciousness and Yaqui's critique of Darwinism. And toward the end, we'll discuss a little bit life. What is life? A comment from Jack on Part 5. I want to agree with something he wrote. He described Yaqui's, quote, compression of knowledge and as being outside and above the left-right paradigm. And he wrote, Yaqui seems to have always had this wider vision, even at a young age. But for me, it was like slowly floating up from a submerged stupor into awareness. There is definitely a spiritual quality in his vision, which still acknowledges racial difference without the dogmatic materialistic insistence of so much WN, white nationalism, today. What Jack is talking about there, I think, is one way of reconciling Yaqui's spirit and spiritual sense with what I see instead as a consciousness or an awareness. As Jack notes, Yaqui seemed from an early age to be conscious and aware, whereas many of us, most of us, become conscious only later in life. And by conscious, I don't mean conscious of, in a literal sense, I mean conscious of what's going on, conscious of race, conscious of our part in a larger existence with and our relationship with in our race and the history of what's happened previously, which is what we're examining here and why we're examining Yaqui, is to try and understand, try and make ourselves more conscious of what's going on, what's been tried, what's been thought. So that's one way to reconcile Yaqui and what Yaqui argued, that he was arguing in favor of what, when he was arguing in favor of spirit, that that corresponds roughly to what I would describe instead as consciousness, awareness. Maybe just because he was conscious and always conscious and many of the people around him were, he lost sight of the fact that most of us aren't. Most, and many white people never, and maybe even most, never become conscious of race, the things that Yaqui thought about without a second thought. We're not conscious of the competition, and that is the main difference between us and the Jews, and why the Jews have outcompeted whites so far. The Jews put much of their effort not only into teaching their own people to be conscious of who they are and how to behave, how to survive, but in attacking any sign of consciousness from the host amongst whom they live, in this case, the white race, in our case. Now, Yaqui saw things in terms of these grand dichotomies. I think it was a flaw that he tended to binarize the world around him in trying to understand it. He saw these two anthropomorphized forces utterly opposed to each other, and that's one of the reasons he attacked or criticized Darwinism, is because he saw it as being on the bad side, on the side of rationalism, the same side that liberalism was on. He saw no middle ground between the spiritual and the material. He definitively came down on the side of spirit over material. Couldn't be both. And that's why he felt compelled to deconstruct Darwinism. On page 70, we'll read here from Imperium, "The easiest refutation is the paleontological. Fossil deposits found in various parts of the earth must represent the possibilities generally, yet they disclose only stable species forms and disclose no transitional types, which show a species evolving, with quotes around it, into something else. And then in a new fossil hoard, a new species appears in its definitive form, which remains stable. The species that we know today and for past centuries are all stable, and no case has ever been observed of a species, quote, adapting itself to change its anatomy or physiology, which, quote, adaptation then resulted in more fitness, more, quote, fitness for the, quote, struggle for existence, unquote, and was passed on by heredity with the result of a new species. This is Yockey really in denial. He's not making a real refutation of Darwinism. He's created a straw man version of what Darwin, what he thinks Darwinism is, and refuting that. And in doing so, I think he's misrepresenting what the paleontological or archaeological evidence actually indicates. It's incomplete. That's true. It's spotty. It's sparse. It's full of holes. And yet, even like a picture that is missing many of its pieces, a puzzle, for instance, missing pieces, you can still get the general idea of what the picture is. You can fill in the lines, connect the lines, and see what the picture must look like if the pieces that are missing. Now, you can't say for sure if you added those missing pieces, and if there are too many pieces missing, you can't see. But that's what Darwinism, or at least since Charles Darwin's day, the efforts to demonstrate the truth or falsity of Darwinism have tried to find evidence for it in the paleontological record. But Darwin himself was basing his theory on transitional types that he had found in the living world amongst birds that were actually alive. He found different species. He called them they're called Darwin's finches, five or six different species on different islands. And this is what gave him the idea that's how speciation happens, that he imagined a single species initially colonizing all of the islands and branching out onto to the different parts of each island and specializing over time on the different food that was available in each place, in some places shellfish and other places other things, and developed then different beaks to deal with those different types of food to adapt. Now, whatever caused that, whether it's Darwinism or something else that you want to call something else, that is evidence in the living world of transitional types. So Yockey's claim that there's no evidence of transitional types is just flat wrong, because there have been other examples found in the archaeological record as well. There's a recent story I'll link in the program post about polar bears and brown bears, which are related. They're actually closely related. The polar bears and brown bears, this is based on DNA evidence, diverged only about 400,000 years ago, they think. And it happened because polar bears moved north and adapted to life in the high Arctic and the unique marine mammals that were there and changed to adapt to this hyperlipid diet. So the fact is that speciation happens, and it has happened actually recent. There has been evidence for it. You can't fault Yockey for not being aware of DNA or things that have since become known since 1948 when he was writing. But I do fault him for asserting that the archaeological record, which was incomplete even in his day, more incomplete than it is now, proves either way what's going on. It's a theory. Darwinism is a theory, and it explains better what's happening than no theory whatsoever, which is what Yockey put up against it. Nothing. Yockey writes, calling culture man a, quote, higher animal, still treats him as an animal. Culture man is a different world spiritually from all animals and is not to be understood by referring him to any artificial materialistic scheme. I think here is the root of Yockey's problem with Darwinism and speciation, because Darwinism is really a theory about how species form. And at root, I think it's that Yockey really didn't want to accept that man was just another animal. He saw a difference. And again, I think the way to reconcile what he's arguing here, what he calls culture man, and the different world spiritually that man inhabits from animals, is what I would call consciousness. It's man is just another animal, but an animal that has a difference, a consciousness, this awareness of our surroundings, an ability to communicate with each other, not just at the moment in time, but to communicate across history by writing down our history, by writing down our stories. And now we have global communication, so we can talk to each other on the other side of the planet instantly as well, which adds another wrinkle to that communication. But still, it's just consciousness. That's what separates us from the other animals. So what Yaki sees as a difference in spirit, a spiritual difference, I would simply say is a consciousness difference. It's an awareness difference. And it is a qualitative difference. I accept that too and agree on that point. But I would say, as to his emphasis on culture to the point where he calls it culture man to distinguish it from animals, is that it's not culture really. Below culture comes consciousness. Consciousness had to come before culture. Culture springs from consciousness, not the other way around. Yaki writes, if this picture of the facts were correct, Darwinism, he means, species ought to be fluid at the present time. They should be turning into one another. This is, of course, not so. There should actually be no species, but only one surging mass of individuals engaged in a race to reach man. But the quote, struggle, again, is quite inconclusive. The lower forms, simpler, less fit, have not died out, have not yielded to the principle of Darwinian evolution. They remain in the same form they have had for, as the Darwins would say, millions of years. Why do they not evolve into something higher? Well, this is Yaki once again showcasing his own misunderstanding, his own caricature understanding of what Darwinism and what evolution, what speciation really is. What's he describes is not so, but that's not because he's described Darwinism accurately. This is his own misunderstanding that he's mocking here. He rejects speciation, really. He not only rejects the idea that man is an animal, but rejects the idea that species change, it seems, over time, that they develop into other species, that they branch off from each other, which seems to be, from the facts of reality, what the reality of the situation is. When he says that they ought to be totally fluid, turning into one another, that's his own straw man description of Darwinism, that there should actually be no species, just one. Why? That's not what Darwinism implies at all. Because Darwinism is it's a theory trying to describe the facts that are actually seen and explain how it came to be, explain what the mechanism is. If it's wrong, if that description of the mechanism, if some evidence is found that description is wrong, the description is modified, if it can be, thrown out ultimately if it can't be proven. But this kind of argument that Yaki's making against it is not a refutation in a scientific sense, in that he doesn't really refer to facts. He refers to his own straw man arguments against it. And I think what he's doing in large part is he's mixing quote unquote social Darwinism, which regards man who's conscious, with Darwinism, which was really originally, the theory was meant to explain the evolution in the animal world pre-consciousness and the unconscious animals, put it that way. Man is a different beast because of consciousness. That really changes the equation of evolution. Stability is an illusion. What, you know, he referred to earlier, how the archaeological record shows the stability of a species. It's not really. The individual species may be stable for a while, but then they disappear and they're replaced with other species. And it could just be because our record is so incomplete and because geologic time is so vast that the switchover, that the speciation really happens relatively quickly and doesn't have time to be recorded. Geologically. Yaki writes on page 72, now the utilitarian aspect of the picture is also quite subjective, i.e. English, capitalistic, parliamentarian. For the utility of an organ is relative to the use sought to be made of it. A little further on, he writes, the naive tautological doctrine of utility never asked, quote, utility for what, unquote. This gets at what the previous paragraph I had read, where he's mocking the concept of lower forms of life and higher forms of life, and why do these lower forms of life that aren't fit stick around? Well, and now he's talking about this utilitarian projection of utilitarian economical thinking onto nature and other animals that we spoke about in previous installments. This is, again, his own misunderstanding of what fitness means. If you look at a form of life and it exists in reality, that is the definition of fitness. That is what utility is. That's the definition. Fit for what? Fit for survival. Utility for survival. That's what Darwinism is. That's the idea behind it. That's how you define fitness, is survival. Yaki goes off the deep end here. He writes, the soul of the lion and his power go together. The hand of man and his brain go together. No one can say that the strength of the lion causes him to live the way he does, nor that the hand of the man is responsible for his technical achievements. It is the soul in each case which is primary. This primacy of the spiritual inverts the Darwinian materialism on the doctrine of utility. Indeed, Yaki, as I've said before, as I sensed even when he was speaking of liberalism, he asserts the primacy of the spiritual over the material. He places mysticism over and above material reality, over facts. And it's not really whether it's Darwin or not. If it had been Smith, and this, we were talking about Smithianism, he'd be just as vehemently opposed to it, I think. Because it's not the details of the theory that disturb him or that he disagrees with, even though that's what he's doing here, is picking nits with what he sees as the details. It's the idea itself, because he wants to assert the primacy of the spiritual over the material. But it's even easier, actually, to assert the primacy of the material, because whatever anyone has to say about it, the reality, the material reality, is right there just waiting to be probed and tested, which is what science is all about. He writes, the whole grotesquerie of Darwinism and of the materialism of the entire 19th century generally is a product of one fundamental idea, an idea which happens also to be non-factual to this century, even though it was a prime fact a century ago. This one idea was that life is formed by the outer. He means thereby outer forces. And in his mind, life and the meaning of life, the definition of life, is that it's inner, that it's driven from within and imposes itself upon the outer. There is a sense in which that's true, that that is what life seems to be, is something that resists the law of entropy, that otherwise seems to govern with an iron hand in our universe. But what he's doing here really is denying, I think, external agency, that the idea in Darwinism specifically of natural selection, meaning that the environment will kill you if you're not fit. If you do something wrong, if you are not fit for survival, then you will die and not reproduce. And that this is one of the forces that is shaping life. This is what so disturbed Yaki, and is what he's really arguing against. He doesn't like that idea. But again, as I say, he got mired in the details, making these detailed arguments about the underlying details, when what's really important is these high level decisions that he came to for whatever reason, that the spiritual is comes first, is prime over the material. And yet, in a purely factual sense, what is life? Life is the actualizing of the possible. The possible turns into the actual in the midst of outer facts, which affect only the precise way in which the possible becomes actual, but cannot touch the inner force, which is expressing itself through, and if necessary, in opposition to, the outer facts. Well, in a way, life is actualizing the possible is, sounds very similar to me to Darwinism, because there does seem to be, and it's teleological too, in that there does seem to be a driving force that makes life want to live, and yet nature crimps it and cuts and edits it from the outside. There is an equal force on the outside that shapes life. Yaki writes, life is the unfolding of a soul, an individuality. Again, he's putting a spiritual sheen on what I would describe simply as consciousness. He writes, Darwinism was an animalization of culture man by means of biology. Marxism, the animalization of man through economics. And it, just to recall here, Darwinism was only one of the three things that he was criticizing early on in his book. He lumped Darwinism together, saw it associated with Marxism and Freudianism, to Jewish intellectual movements. And I think that that really is the a good sign that he was making a mistake, is that Darwinism was not a Jewish creation, and it hasn't been driven by the Jews. In fact, in the period, in the decades before World War II, Jews were very much opposed to Darwinism, the idea that the white man, the European man, was starting to figure out the science of race, was really threatening the Jews, was threatening to reveal the nature of the Jews, and the Jews went to work to derail that effort and succeeded ultimately. A little further on, after he describes Marxism, he writes on page 88, as socialism, which we've talked about previously, what he's talking about here is not socialism, not Jewish socialism, but Spengler's Prussianism, which I would say is also, you could call it Aryanism or national socialism, that sense of socialism. As socialism creates the form of the future, Marxism slips into the past with the other remnants of materialism. The mission of Western man is not to become rich through class war. It is to actualize his inner ethico, politico, cultural imperative. This is echoing again his thesis of Imperium, his purpose in writing it. Now, in contrast to Yaki, I want to refer you to a recent podcast that Kevin Strom does. It's available in written form also at the National Vanguard. And the most recent, it's not most recent, but it was a recent podcast he had titled William Pierce, Cosmotheism's Hard Way. And he talked a little bit about this issue of life. What is life? And William Pierce and Kevin Strom and the National Alliance and Cosmotheism take a 180 degree different view of life and Darwinism and science and rationalism than what Yaki had. And it goes to show that there are other ways to interpret life and even rationalism that don't reject rationalism just because some of its products are bad or can be criticized, that that rationalism and the idea of reasoning and logic and even extrapolating based on known facts to hypothesize about things that are not yet known for sure is good. This podcast actually talks about an article that was titled Life is Evolution, that was written by Don Kaiser. And he writes, the sole characteristic that ultimately distinguishes living from non-living matter. In other words, how do we define what is living? What is life? How do you distinguish it from non-life? He writes that the sole characteristic is classical Darwinian evolution. Life is simply matter that evolves. Evolution is the sole feature that differentiates living matter from non-living matter. Life is evolution. The two are inseparable. Given the fact that all life forms die, how do they persist through time and changing environments? Every environment harboring life forms must change simply because of their existence. So evolution is the only way life forms can persist through time. Not only did Charles Darwin discover what makes life possible, despite the fact that all life forms eventually die, he unwittingly discovered the sole feature that distinguishes living from non-living matter. Charles Darwin defined life. Life is evolution. Strom comments on this. He says, to the cosmotheist, nature is God, and science, logic, observation, reason, and the deepest stirrings of our race soul are the means of apprehending God. Mathematics, physics, and genetics are the real words of God. Cosmotheism asserts that we are matter and energy become conscious, and more than that, that we are the universe become conscious, that we are nature become conscious of itself, and all that implies. It further shows us that we have reached a radically new stage in the evolution of the universe, as significant perhaps as the evolution of non-living matter into living beings. As significant as the first rise of consciousness itself. Significant as the faltering steps of the first amphibians on the surface of the earth. This new stage has come only recently, when European man first grasped the concept of evolution and discovered the principles of genetics and heredity. It is the stage of conscious evolution and the ability of living beings to direct and vastly accelerate the future course of their own evolution. Now, tying this back into and explaining, I think, what Strom is getting at here is, first, there is the difference between non-living things and life. And then, amongst the living, is the difference between the unconscious and the conscious. And what Strom is getting at is the next step even beyond that, of the merely conscious and the conscious life, which actually takes the reins, aware of how, what life is, and taking control of its own destiny and directing its own further development. I think in Yaki's day, this was inconceivable. There was no idea that man would be able to edit his own genes. But in a way, there was. There was eugenics, and it was just done in a kind of crude way through who is allowed to reproduce and who's encouraged to reproduce and who's discouraged. And that's how it worked. But it has to do with consciousness. Consciousness is important.